Whoa. I love And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of This Is Africa. My name is Adama.
Hi, guys. My name is Tamba.
Hey, y'all. My name is Lloyd.
Welcome back. My name is Amiri.
Thank you guys for being here today with us again. Today, we're going to be talking about religion. Okay. Today, we're going to talk about religion, religion as an institution in Africa, and specifically in politics, and how it's positively or negatively shaped our way of living, and how those in positions of power have decided to conduct their roles, respectively, using religion. I kind of wanted to start this off today with a quote. This is from a Kenyan Christian philosopher named John Mbiti, who he actually passed away in 2019. What he had said was, "It's hard to define religion as a whole, but for Africans, religion has rules about conduct that guide life within a social group, and it is often organized and practiced in a community. Instead of being an individual or personal affair, all African societies view life as one big whole, and religion permeates all aspects of life." I think we can say that if this stands true, and I think we believe that as a group here, religion is very impactful and decides a lot of what Africans do on a day-to-day basis. And history has shown religion used in several ways throughout time. And I guess, Sika, you want to take us off a little bit and kind of go through
how that's going? Yeah, of course, of course. I'm not going to bore you guys too much listening to the history, so this is going to be brief. I want to start off by saying that within this conversation, we know that religion is a very sensitive topic for everybody, and we're not... Our goal is not to bash anybody's religion. We're more so focusing on the institution of religion and how it's being used to maybe help some minds in politics or manipulate some minds in politics. So that's why we're going to keep in mind that. And that's why we're really focusing on Africa for this episode. The history of religion in Africa, we both know how, I mean, all of us know how Christianity came to Africa. You know, it came through Christian missionaries during... the times of, you know, slavery, colonization, and stuff like that.
That's commitment.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy.
There's no doors and cabs to knock on people's doors on Sundays. Yeah.
Missionaries, like... they came. That's how it came to Africa. And then Islam kind of followed through the same path. It came down and it came. Christianity came first and Islam came next. Some also, those are the two major religions in Africa. But before those came, we did have traditional religions, which varies from, you know, each country and their culture, you know, that's how you practiced it. Yeah, and the tribes as well, Lord, like Lord said. In Ethiopia, though, they had, you know, Judaism, so that was also part of the religion, but the two major ones were Islam and Christianity. And a little bit about the history of religion in politics. You know, it's, I believe religion has always been in politics. It's always been intertwined. An example that I could give in Africa is Samori Ture, which was, he was an imam in Guinea, but he was known as one of the, like, the greatest freedom fighters fighting against the French, you know, so.
Kenya? Guinea?
No, in Guinea. Okay, okay. So it was part of, like, the Wasolo Empire, which kind of now today is more in Guinea. As for the people that don't know much about Africa that are listening, Guinea is kind of,
it's right next to Senegal.
Yeah, it's right by Senegal, if you know where Senegal is. So it's
right on the west coast.
It's West Africa. So it's West Africa. So that happened. And he was like a prominent religious leader. And he used, you know, his religion to give faith to his people in order to combat, you know, the Western powers that were coming to colonize. So that's kind of how religion has been used in Africa in a good way, right? And we have the bad ways that we all, that we're going to get into as the conversation goes on. So I don't know if anybody wants to step in before we start talking about that.
I also have another example of that. So also in Ethiopia with Haile Selassie, where, like, he used religion to, like, help motivate and convince his people to fight back against the Western powers, you know, from colonization and colonialism. You know, that he played a huge factor, not only influencing African ways of thinking, but influencing, like, specifically Jamaica, you know, in terms of, like, rebelling against the quote-unquote, say, Babylon, you know. So, like, yeah.
And also another example of religion, just, this is not pertaining to Africa specifically, but this is, you know, the Romans and the Romans, the popes and stuff like that. The popes had a lot of power, and they had a lot of religious power, and they even had armies. So, like, my thing is, like, I don't know if we can, because I always have trouble with this, right, to differentiate politics from religion. But it's always hard because they're intertwined. Even in America, when an election is happening, you know, there's the, like, for example, Mike Pence, he was, like, the Christian, kind of like the Christian guy for Trump. And he brought, you know, that religious support into Trump winning eventually back in the day. He's gone now. But what's it called? In my country of Mali as well, that kind of happened where religion kind of intertwined in our political realm. And now you cannot make the difference between the two. You know, it got to the point where during election times, mosques were turned into voting places. And when you come to the mosque, whoever that religious leader, the imam, was supporting, that's who they voted for. And that's kind of caused it. So now when the president was elected, who truly has the power? Is it the president or is it the imam? And what does the president need to do in order to stay in power? Is keeping the imam happy at the time. So those are some of the things that I want to get into as a conversation develops, so we can kind of see if we can differentiate those and maybe come to a conclusion by the end of this conversation to see if it's a good thing or it's a bad thing.
I think just because, like, we'll go into more specifics about specific things that politicians or people in power have done to, or how they've used religion to, like, or to do specific things or get jobs done. But I think I wanted to touch on what TK started talking about when you said, like, you didn't necessarily understand how religion and politics are intertwined, per se.
Okay, yeah. Or how they could be separated.
Or how can they be separated. Yeah. I guess, because what it made me think about was, like, it kind of makes sense, I think, like, for them to be connected. Hmm. When we think about how governing people works and how a sustaining, like, group of sustaining a body of people in a society and making the system work and everything. I just feel like what people respect the most in this world is religion. I think fundamentally, like, as far as rules that people follow, I think religion is probably the highest thing that people respect. Religion and then the governing body behind where you live. And it only makes sense for government to use that in a good way, neutrally, good or bad, but, like, it only makes sense for government to use that in order to have a sustainable society. Okay. I think by default, if you have a country, you need to have religion. Otherwise, it doesn't necessarily work for me.
Well, there's a fine line, you know? Like, most of our countries in the world say they're secular. African countries especially have secular countries. So in order to use... When you're using religion, right? So give me an example. Is it being used to, like, control the people? Because there's a way you can look at religion. You can say it's used to control the people.
I think it is, yeah.
Which I think that's a heavy, you know, adjective I'm using right now, controlling. But it's
good and bad, both.
Yeah, it's, like, it's a way of
manipulating. It keeps order.
Influence.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would say they definitely have influence because, well, to me, it's kind of like a theory, but it could be true or false. But I feel like depends on, like, the country and your culture too, you know. Like, it's like the more conservative your country are, they more tend to lead towards a more religious political agenda. Whereas the more liberal or progressive your country are, they tend to lead to more, like, they try to separate religion from politics, you know. So if you look at a country like Afghanistan. I say it could be true or false, you feel me?
Yeah.
But if you look at a country like Afghanistan with the Taliban regime, they basically control all the politics within the country. Okay. You know, and that's like a religious base. That's a whole religious group, you know? Whereas if you look at America, they separate, they at least try to separate religion from politics. So it depends on, like, your culture and, like, the country that you're based in, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and also ever since back in time, you even have, like, political theorists like Machiavelli. I know most people don't agree with them and stuff like that, but even he said that you can't even question religion. Like, the one thing you can't question when it comes to politics that people are afraid to talk about, even us today, you can see that we're kind of uncomfortable talking about it, is that you can never question God, right? And when somebody uses God to push a political goal, I personally think that's wrong. Even though sometimes it could be in a good sense, right? But just using that alone gives you an unfair advantage. You know, that is something nobody is willing to question. And if you are a big religious leader, you're already legitimate. That's all you need for legitimacy. You know, people will not question. So that's the aspect I was talking about that may kind of create like an unfair environment, you know?
Yeah. I guess this is the perfect time to talk about some of those examples specifically and kind of go into some of the cases that we've seen or whatever it is. So, Lord, you want to take us away right now?
So, like, one example of, in terms of religion influencing governance, is what happened in Tanzania, where when COVID-19 running rampant in Tanzania, and the president of Tanzania, Magufuli, was just downplaying the importance or the threat of COVID-19 negatively affecting people in Tanzania. And then he goes on to use the rhetoric saying that, you know what, COVID-19 is not in Tanzania. We're just going to pray about it. He had some moments or some days where he said, I'm going to declare this day prayer and fasting day to just pray about COVID-19 going away. I think one time he said that God has removed COVID-19 out of Tanzania. Mm-hmm. So basically just using the rhetoric of religion as an excuse to not put in proper
safety precautions.
Yeah, proper safety precautions to take care of your people, rather than just saying that, oh, God is going to do this and God is going to do that. Yeah, I'm not denying that God would not intervene, but just because God is going to intervene doesn't mean that you don't do your part. You have to do your part to make sure that at least your people are safe, because one thing that people have to also understand is that, like, not everybody follows a religion or not everybody believes in God. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, well, I'm not saying not in Africa, but I could definitely say unequivocally that not everybody in Africa believes in God. That I can definitely
yes,
say of course. That.
Yes, you can.
So, say that. I'm not saying whether it's facts or not, but it's something that I could definitely say that.
Yes, you can.
It will be debatable in my opinion. But basically, yes, using religion as a form of apathy to not actually take proper precautions for when something is really going on in your country, where now it's just saying God will do this, God will do that, and then COVID-19 cases are rising. And then just because of the rhetoric of, you know, God will intervene and, you know, nothing is happening, now you're suppressing the reports of COVID-19 taking place in Tanzania, where you're shutting up people who are actually whistleblowers of, like, saying that, like, look, this is a big problem in Tanzania and the whole world must know about it, and you're shutting them down. You know what I'm saying? So that right there, just using God as an excuse for, I don't want to use the word incompetence, but just as an excuse for not doing your job, mm-hmm. or not taking responsibility of what you're supposed to do, is one negative way that using religion as a rhetoric to, you know, push forward your own agendas is actually detrimental to the development of your country. So I wonder what you guys think about what happened in Tanzania in regards to the president. Yeah. Well, the late president, because he died, and there are conspiracies around his death, whether it's COVID, heart attack, the West, him not taking...
Like the West.
Oh, I'm serious. There's a lot of conspiracies around his death. But, what do you guys think about it?
Yeah, no, I mean, immediately what strikes me the most, I guess, is like... And it took me a second to really grasp, because when you brought up the case study, I guess, when we spoke about it prior, I was like... After a while, I was trying to figure out, well, why exactly was the lie for? Like, well, what is... What were you trying to avoid? Were you just saying it just to say it? Like, you know, because at the end of the day, I feel like you have to put up precautions. Like, you have to do something. So it's like, to hear that it really was just like, kind of, let's just use this to make sure that, let's just use this so that we don't have to do as much work, or I don't have to come out and do as much as I would have. Like, that's what catches me off guard.
Well, like I was saying, this is it's something you can't question.
Is it not?
You know what I mean? If somebody you look up to religiously comes out and says, God said, but he's the president, but and he comes out and says, God says, but he had religious people behind him backing this. That's the thing. So if you come out with that and you tell the people that, what's there to argue? And to Lord's point a little bit when he was saying, like, not everybody in Africa is religious or believes in God. I was making a joke, but I just want to say 95% of the continent is super religious. No matter if there's Christianity, they follow one religion. Everything in Africa that happens, we got to pray about it.
Yeah.
Everything that happens, you got to pray about it. I don't know if you guys remember when you were younger, right? And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I just want to highlight to the people how religious the African continent is, right? We're told from a young age, right? Whatever religion you're born into, that's what you got to follow, and you have to follow it as strict as possible. You know, in Mali, when the prayer hours come, there's a mosque almost everywhere. You can hear it. You have to go pray. If you don't go pray, they're hitting you in the back of the head, getting you to the mosque. In school, we used to pray. When I was in Mali, I went to a Turkish school. We had to pray during the prayer times. Like, we would stop class and go pray and then come back to class. During exams, I don't know if everybody did this, but this is kind of my little experience myself, right? Let's just say if I didn't study all the way for a test or I wasn't confident, we'll take our pens to our local imams or and stuff and have them pray in our pens. And they used to be like this fantasy, like, oh, like when you get to class, all the ideas are just going to come to the pen and it's going to write for you. Like, no, of course it doesn't work, but that's how we believe. It's a mental thing. It's like religion. Once you pray, once you have everything, you will get everything in life. Now, obviously, from a place of privilege, we're talking today, we are educated enough to see that that's not everything. Religion is important. It guides us, gives us guidance. We have to believe. As I'm speaking right now, it's Ramadan and I'm fasting. So I'm religious and I practice my religion, right? But there's some people who didn't get the privilege. Again, I'm speaking from a place of privilege. That are not as privileged as me, who haven't had the parents I've had and who haven't had the chance to attend school like I've had, that can't differentiate those fantasies or those, you know, myth from the reality. You know,
even well-educated people
talking to Mike, bro.
But even well-educated people still, one way, shape, or form, adhere to those beliefs or those principles under those beliefs, even as well-educated as they are. Like the president saying that God is going to remove coronavirus from Tanzania. You're a well-educated man. Like, you're not just president of Tanzania out of nowhere. So why are you going to spill, like, saying all that? You get me? Like, I get where he's coming from, but at the end of the day, I don't know, rebutting to what Tamba said in terms of having the privilege to be, you know, well-educated or being exposed to different types of information to really differentiate what's fact, fiction, and what's spiritual. People who are in high levels of power or people who are in positions of power who are actually educated are pushing for these things. So I don't think being as educated or being exposed, you know, out of nowhere, you're not going to be thinking that way. No, I don't believe that.
Well, that's when my argument all comes in, like I was saying in the beginning. That's when it becomes that you're manipulating people at that point. He knows what's the truth or not. He was wearing a mask at his rallies. You know, yes, he was. When they evacuated him to take him to another country to go get treated, he didn't sit there and say, oh, God said this, I'm going to stay in my country with my people. He took that plane and he left. You know, rest in peace to him, but what I'm that's you
yeah,
played
exactly. You have to wait.
Sorry. This guy's talking on the mic. You don't have the mic. But what I was trying to say is that's exactly my point. When the time comes where they can use religion to manipulate people, and this I understand it's a strong adjective, right? That I'm using. It's very strong, and this is a sensitive topic.
But it's accurate though.
But when it's time to use it to manipulate people, they do it. And not only that, they know better. And that's what kills me. You know, people know this. These educated people that I was talking about, that you're saying, oh, we're not going to sit here and say that he didn't know. He knew exactly what he was doing. He wanted Tanzania to not shut down trade to keep going, you know, flight to keep coming out in and out of Tanzania. He didn't want to shut down Tanzania just like every other country did to take precautions. He wanted it to keep going. And not only that, the numbers, like you said, they were not recording their COVID deaths or their COVID cases. So it looked like Tanzania was doing perfectly fine. But like Lord brother, whistleblowers would come out and say what's going on, and it was getting bad. Even to this day, we're talking from a place of speculation, right? But there's not enough information on Tanzania's COVID stuff, right? Their cases. But we know, we can use our intellect to know that it's bad. So Lord, to my point, I wasn't saying that, oh, when we can differentiate the two, right? Now you can choose whether you can use your political benefit or if you want to use it to do good. You know, and that's what my argument was. I'm not saying that, oh, when you're intellectual and smart, oh, you just like don't see the stuff. You see it, but some people just use it to do bad. And that's actually my question to you guys. When it's being used in politics, such as the example of Tanzania, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, for me and my interpretation of it, like, well, religion in general. That's what I feel like. Well, we all know that religion have a lot of positives and like a lot of faith systems, belief systems. But that's where it comes into like the dangerous part about it. It's like you could use it for good or bad, and like you can't ignore facts, data, and science. You know, like at some point you have to like you could always have your faith and beliefs, but at some point, you have to, like, do your own research and look at the facts, science, and data and make your own prediction of, like, what would best benefit you as a person and as a country.
Okay. May I ask you a question? So that's the thing. When these facts and science and stuff like that, when the people, like I said, when the people are not educated to that level to be able to make these differences, when you're young, all you know is what the imam's been telling you, right? How do you make the difference if you're not educated? So does the education ultimately play a factor on how effective religion is in a country? Is that, I mean, the lack of education?
I mean, it's not the lack of education. It's when you fill in the negative effects of it. I'm sure that people who are going through, if they're affected by COVID-19, definitely knew that COVID-19 is real because they got sick. So you don't need to be educated to know that, oh, God is going to take away COVID-19 or using, I'm talking about... The late president's rhetoric in terms of using that for his own, you know, benefit. You can't use that. You know what I'm saying? But going to your point of like people differentiating it, you don't need to be educated to differentiate when something is going wrong and when something is going good because you feel the negative effects of it.
But you need to know what's going on with you. You need to be able to identify what is the negative thing. You can't just be like, oh, I feel bad. Like something's wrong. No. You need to be able to know what to do, how to solve the problem, where the problem came from, how can I avoid it from happening again? Those are all educational things.
Exactly. But going to my point again, if you're going through these, if you're ill and you're sick, and then you're just saying, oh, pray, and you're not actually giving people the opportunity to get themselves out of all these questions that you're asking in terms of how can I take care of myself? How can I do this? How can I do that? How can I do this? Now that's where religion is actually being detrimental to somebody's safety and well-being, because now you're just using the rhetoric of, oh, God will save you, but you're not putting in things in place to make sure that at the end of the day, of course, if you believe in that, that's great, but also understand that you really need to put safety precautions to look after the well-being of your people, regardless of religion or irrespective of religion.
But that's you also need to give them it. Because I feel like what you're looking at is very one-sided. It's super like, oh, okay, yeah, if you just do, like, all you have to do is just set them up. Just set them up for it. Just set them up for it. But they need to educate themselves so that they can continue to, so they can do their part is what I'm trying to say. Like, Everything is a two-sided thing. So, yeah, I do blame, I do blame the government more so because if you're spouting stuff like that, there are groups of people who believe it. There are groups of people, even if you convince one person to go and just be like, this is going to be taken care of without me doing a dang thing. Like, you've messed up. Even if you save 90 million other people. If you could not protect that one person, in my opinion, you've done a little bit bad at your job. So, the government is definitely the problem. However, you cannot sit down and just neglect the fact that there's another side of this, which is the people. And the people need to be more educated. Yeah, those resources are provided by the government, but people do need to go out of their way more to demand that level of education.
Yeah, and I'm going to add to it before Lord, you can rebuttal. Also, Lord said something, the government needs to, he said something along the lines like they need to put the right stuff in place to guide their people to get out of the stuff, right? And he said that if somebody is sick, you're going to notice and you need to get up. Yeah. Like you notice it, right? If somebody is ill and the message they're hearing that if I pray and I take these traditional medicine, I'm going to be okay. What do you expect them to do? They're not. That's who they believe in. Yeah. How do you expect them to get themselves out of it? You know what I mean? And that's what I want you to see. I'm not disagreeing with you. I feel like you're saying exactly what I'm saying. You're coming into my point. The lack of education in them doesn't, they don't have the ability to differentiate them. Even though they're sick, they're being told, if you take this, it's okay. You'll be fine. Even us that were educated back when COVID was first starting, I know a bunch of African was on the WhatsApp doctors, right? And they were all like, oh,
they were going crazy.
You drink ginger tea. You were all getting those forwards. You drink ginger tea. You're okay. And we're educated enough. We're like, ginger tea. Yeah, all right. That's not supposed to make you okay. That's not the only
thing. It helps.
Yeah, we still drank the ginger tea, of course. But it's not like, that's not the only thing. You got to protect yourself. You got to wear a mask.
Yeah.
You know, we're able to make that difference. What if somebody that can't, that's not, like I said, level of education. It doesn't have to be, higher education. Just the basics of knowing this stuff, right?
Yeah.
But if you just know, ginger is not the only thing that's going to make me okay. I got to go see a doctor. But if you're being told that, no, just stay at home, drink the ginger, and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's the negative aspect. And Lord said it. That's when it becomes negative. Because
think about it like this, bro. I just want to just add just one little thing. We're talking about not just individuals, but people were, because COVID, the problem is not just no one's been concerned about just the individual. It's what you're doing to the people that you end up walking by, that you deal with every day, that you love, and all these different things. That's the big bulk of the issue, I guess. It's like how much we care for the other human being. That's what COVID has highlighted. And when you think about what TK kind of just said, that rhetoric is super dangerous because, like I said, all it takes is just one. Especially in African cultures where families are structured. You know what I mean? Like, if I get the father, I've got a family. Like, I got five people now that I've just messed up.
you get the village chief to believe something like that. Oh, pray it's about over. It, take ginger. It's over. That whole village.
The whole village gone.
Repercussions.
You know what I'm saying? So, just say that. But yeah, now you can go.
But here's my thing. What if you are educated and you do believe in a specific religion, right? And you understand and know how to differentiate, you know, those two things. And you bring in attention to it, but you keep getting shut down. Because you're saying that in terms of like people who are not educated and who believe in that rhetoric, right? Now I'm saying people who have a strong belief in their religion and are educated and know how to differentiate those two, right? But just because the people from the top are spilling something for them to use as an excuse for not doing their job, and the people who are educated to know the difference between, you know, spirituality and what's really going on, or science, and they actually want to make sure that they are protected or they are taken care of, but they cannot do so because the government is not giving them the proper PPE equipment to protect themselves, such as masks, for them to have social distancing in place. You know, all these things that are supposed to be implemented. Again, you're an educated spiritual person that can actually differentiate those two. But just because people at the top are using, But that's my point. Like, I get the point that you're saying, but I'm also looking at the other side, where you have one group of people who are like that, who are uneducated and can be able to and not be able to differentiate between those two. But what about the people who are educated and can differentiate between the spirituality aspect of things and the
mask?
Yeah, but even though they have masks, but guess what? As a government, you're supposed to look after the well-being of your people. So, of course, yes, it's up to you to make sure that you have masks. But it's also important that you put in things in place to, like, have free mask program that, like, look, we're going to have masks in every convenience store out on the street.
Yeah, your mask is useless if somebody else isn't wearing their mask, too.
But like I said, again, we're saying the same thing. We're talking about both. How this goes back to the point of how it can be manipulated to perform acts like this. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm actually agreeing with you. But you, at first, you were saying that education doesn't matter. And that's what I was kind of trying to get to it in terms of the religion aspect, how it can balance it. Now I want to, can we, if you guys don't mind, let's move a little bit. Or do you want to say something? Because I wanted to move into the political aspect of it now. You know, instead of the, because we kind of talk about the health part. So the political aspect.
So, okay. Yeah. So like, touching in politics, I guess like with everything that we've said, like and how we speak about how religion is probably the most influential tool of all time. How, I guess we can, is it up for debate, or can we definitively say like it is or it isn't? Is religion the ultimate tool when it comes to politics, or politicians like leading their campaigns, moving forward, or doing what they're doing?
I mean, it depends. It depends from a country to country basis. I can definitely tell you that. Yeah, I think it depends on a country to country basis. I think religion in Africa,
I think New Zealand.
Yeah, I think religion in Africa definitely has, like, it's a big part of our political realm, because once a leader wants to get into office after those, like I said, chief of villages, those traditional roles, religion is the number one factor. And again, I'm going to give the example of Mali. I'm going to go a little deeper into it. This imam that the president, the former president, because he's not in office anymore, struck a deal with, that was his close friend, and he had all the religious people on his side. The way they marketed him, where they were telling the people that, oh, the imams were telling them every time after a prayer, every time after stuff like that, they would tell them, hey, vote for, when election time came, vote for this guy. He's very religious. He's prayed. He's a religious man. And that was kind of to market him, to get him to power. Now, those same, and this is the legitimacy part I was talking about. So when he came into power, since the imams are the ones that, you could argue, got him in power, once, I don't know, whatever going on between them, once the imam and them and the president kind of broke off, the imam took to the streets and went after the president to take him out of power. And what happened is today he's not in power. He was taken out of power through a coup. So now the imam, it looks like, is more legitimate than the president, who was elected by the people, because the imam is the one that got the people to vote for him. You know, the imams. So that's where it becomes dangerous, because now, I don't know if you guys are Game of Thrones fans or the people listening to us.
Super.
There was a scene where Cersei actually did this, right? The queen used the religious leader to get people to follow her. And it got to a point where the religious leader got so much more powerful than the queen that she took the queen out of power, and he was the leader. People would listen to him, because that's something
she
can't
end up killing
question.
Him very viciously.
So what happened, I mean, in Game of Thrones, what happens is, I mean, obviously it's a movie. She ends up, you know, taking him out.
Blew up the entire church.
Okay, I didn't want to get that graphic, but fine. She blew up the church and basically got her power reinstated. But that is kind of like that's fiction and obviously, it's hyperbole. Yeah, but in my country of Mali, the religious leader stops at the religious leader to power.
There's no killing them to get back.
He had more power than the president. He became more legitimate, and political opposition tagged along with him, and they got ousted the president out of power. And now they're the ones, when the transitional government came, there's speculation that they actually control who was going to be the religious leader, who was going to be the president, who was going to be the prime minister, who was going to be here in this government. So everybody came to him to help put in place the government and stuff like that. But now he's getting some backlash, because the people that are in power today are not competent enough, let's just say. Obviously, Mali has a lot of issues, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but they're not competent enough to do it, because they didn't come because of merit. They came because a religious leader chose them. Now, that religious leader is educated, he's smart, all that stuff. I've actually argued that he's a great politician, because he reversed everything on something you can't question there. And that's what I wanted to highlight in the political realm when they come into it, is that there needs to be a limit to how much they can influence the political realm, because it gets to a point where they become more legitimate than even the leaders. So I don't know if it's a good or bad thing, because some of them can influence them in a good way. Yeah. I'm not saying it, but in Mali, in my particular country, what's happening in my eyes and in a lot of Malians' eyes, it is detrimental to us.
Okay, so, all right, so the only thing I would say, I mean, whether or not it's detrimental, I guess, per se, when we look at religion, I guess the ultimate thing it brings is structure and stability. It provides direction, whether or not it's good or bad, whether or not the direction they're driving you in, the people's in, it provides structure, it provides a guideline, there's rules and there's a direction to travel for. The map is laid out for you ultimately. And as we've seen, I don't think it's possible to win a political position, something very important, without religion backing you in some stance of it.
Or religious leaders
backing you, or yeah, however that might be. So I guess if we ask ourselves, do we think the structure and the stability that religion brings, when we talk about being good and bad, is that worth it? Because I feel like when we think about whether or not it's worth it, you have to balance out whether or not the good. Because yeah, he does scream out, God will take COVID away, right? But it does provide calmness. People would argue it keeps people down from, it keeps chaos down. It manages stress, all those different types of things, even though it does leave people vulnerable.
But that's a false sense to the of security, virus. Though.
But okay, so.
But there's a structure and stability that comes with religion, even outside of just that. Yeah, so it's like, if you get my point, do we think structure and stability is worth the cost of?
So to Adama's point, if you want to say that religion could be a thing that unifies people, absolutely it can. Absolutely. But in cases where it's life or death, or it's something that has to do with the health sector, or even who's going to lead the country. You know, because leading a country is not small chart.
Yeah.
Even in bureaucratic situations. So, for example, like there is this situation that happened in Nigeria, in a specific state in Nigeria, where a school institution, right, is basically headed by Muslims. Right, where they actually have power over the delegation of the teachers that teach in certain schools, whether it's Christian funded schools or Muslim funded schools. But the people, think about it as like a board of education that is run by Muslims, right? But now there's a beef between Muslims and Christians, because the Christians feel marginalized by the Muslims in terms of pushing forward certain religious things, such as the allowing of girls wearing hijabs in classrooms, right? So, for example, the Christian-funded schools are being mandated by basically, like, I would say that board of ed, that students should wear hijabs in school. But the Christian-funded schools are saying no, right? But now, for example, let's say the Christian-funded schools, right, are saying that we're not going to let girls wear hijabs in our school. That's also a big problem. So right there. So that's religion influencing just bureaucratic institutions, or institutions such as education as well. Not only in the political realm, but also in things that affect our daily lives. You know what I'm saying? So right then and there, this is education. You know what I'm saying? This is something that, in theory, is supposed to be free from religion, but it's also permeated into that world too as well. I know, yeah.
To that point. They're connected. I don't think you get to pick between moments, TK. Like, Tamba, I don't think you get to pick between, like, oh, yeah, this moment happens where it's abused in this way. Is that good or bad? Like, yeah, sure, we can easily be like, oh, yeah, that moment was bad. Yeah, that should not have been done. But I guess what really has me thinking is, like, you can't separate it, because, yeah, with good comes bad. It's either you have it or you don't. You either use it and it's a part of your institution, or it's not. Because with every institution, there's good, there's bad, things are abused, things are misused, but things are also appreciated and grown. So it's like, it's either you have it or you don't. And even though, yeah, there are bad moments that we can condemn and be like, yeah, that's bad, I think overall, when we look at like religion and how it's like supposed to work within the confines of African government, like, it's needed. Like, there's no removing it. So good and bad, I think we need to look at them as lapses and moments rather than like things that we need to address so that we can do better at them. But overall, I feel like it's got to be good.
Okay. I mean, that's your opinion. And, you know, I'm not going to knock that. I'm going to say, though, I disagree with it. But I'm going to explain. If you want to say that religion is a part of the African society, I'm never going to deny that. That is absolutely true. But it comes to a point where, once you are a public official or a civil servant, you know, you have to kind of differentiate that when it comes to decisions, when it comes to the country. You cannot just say,
"Oh, but laws are founded off these religions." Like not necessarily.
How not? I mean, that's a deeper conversation. For example, the Malian Constitution is a French constitution. I could tell you,
has touched into Christianity.
95% It's possible, but that's like I said, that's deeper. 95% of the country is Muslim, though. So I'm just saying. So once it comes to that part where it's like everybody, like, because each individual in Africa most likely does have a religious belief. But when once you are in government, because in our society, like I thought we agreed at the beginning, we're not going to get into the conflict part of religion, which Lord kind of brought up a little bit. But one in, as a part in society, right, those issues are going to be there. But I think when it comes to government, and how you're governing your people, of course you need to be aware of that, your people, but decisions, religious leaders should not be able to influence politics to the point where they can oust a president. You know, whether they're doing good or bad, it should be the people's decision, not saying, oh, God said he needs to go, he has to go. You know, I had a revelation last week, God told me that this man is going to go, he has to go. You know, stuff like that. That's what I think should be, you know, different. But in society as a whole, sure, it does, it's good. But I think in politics, it can become very detrimental once it gets into the wrong hands. That type of power gets into the wrong hands. That's what I believe. I don't think it's bad all the way, but it really depends on the individual, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Tombo on that. It definitely depends on the individual, because there are some things that actually have been good with religion. For example, like with the whole civil rights movement, like one of the big leaders of the civil rights movement was Dr. Martin Luther King. Okay. He's a priest by profession, you know what I'm saying? But as Tombo just said, once it's dependent on the person, you know, they can either use it for evil or they can use it for good. And in this case, Martin Luther King used his platform or his power that he has as a priest for good, in terms of speaking out against oppression of African Americans in the United States. So I'm definitely concurring with Tombo's point in terms of, now it boils down to the individual, in terms of you have a platform that a lot of people follow and a lot of people hold dear, and it's hard to question. And if you're in that position, you literally have a responsibility to make sure that you do right by your people. Not for your own selfish agendas, but for the elevation and the development of the people and the country as a whole, in my opinion.
You couldn't have said it any better. Yeah,
facts. And if they're going to be part of it, once they do mess up, I do believe they have to be held accountable. You know, because what
we just need to, I feel like going over accountability is another big topic. Yeah, too.
Of course, but I'm saying, like,
can go into that.
Just to give the people a little bit, though, it's very hard for a judge, a religious judge that looks up to a religious leader, to come, you come stand in front of him and you have to judge him to decide if he's wrong or he's right. If he's the person you're getting your stuff from. But again, yeah, we can wrap it up.
So just before we leave, I believe that one example of religion not being a detriment to African politics or negatively influencing African politics is my country, Ghana. So Ghana is predominantly Christian, but also we have a good Muslim majority, not Muslim majority, but a good Muslim population in Ghana. And Ghana is very, very adamant in terms of keeping peace between both religions and making sure that both religions do not influence or marginalize one religion over the other, especially when it comes to elections or when it comes to voting, or when it comes to just basically anything that has to do with governance or the well-being of people. And part of the reason why it's that way is because we make it a point to recognize both religions, especially in terms of when each religion is having a specific religious holiday or witnessing something that is very sacrosanct to each religion. We also make sure that we also elevate each other. So, for example, when the chief imam is having his his birthday or something is going on at his I don't want to say his palace or his house. The president comes by, artists comes by, even actually Christians come by, the chief pastor be coming by, and they all, you know, visit him, talk to him, also like let him know that he's a part of the country. So long story short, in my opinion, I feel like if we actually get to understand each other's religion and understand the importance of religion in terms of how it governs our society, we'll make it a point not only to understand each other's religion, but also make it a point that we don't let it interfere in our day-to-day governance of the country. So I believe that Ghana is one example of it. If you are listening to this, please comment what country you believe. Also, make it a point that religion does not negatively affect country policy or country governance in that country.
Word. Mary, send us out.
There's some closing statements. I agree a lot with all you guys said.
Mary just woke up. He just woke up by the way. He was sleeping.
I wasn't sleeping. I was not sleeping. I was just thinking. I was just deep within my thoughts, you know? But yeah, I agree with everything you guys said. Religion definitely have its positives, in terms of faith, religion, belief systems, guidance, grouping people together so everybody have a common way of thinking, and where that there are no distractions in terms of if you believe in like groupism and believe in as like a race or culture or as a country in terms of like making your group become more progressive and more powerful, definitely. But however, when you put religion within one person's hand and have that person dictate the faith for the whole country or whole group, that's where it becomes dangerous.
Yeah, the wrong individual, like we were saying.
Yeah, but the wrong individual. But
we hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. It was very hard for us to come to, you know, a conclusion on if it's a good or bad thing, or how we're even going to discuss this, because, you know, this talking about stuff like this is uncomfortable. We hope that we haven't offended anybody. That is not our intent. If we did in this conversation, was not our intent at all. We apologize. We just, you know, this conversation needs to be had about Africa. And I especially want to talk about this because in my country, it is going on, and we see that it's prevalent in Africa. And we would love to hear you guys' feedback in the comments on Instagram. Adama, do you want to tell us what our Instagram is?
T.I.A_pod.
On Twitter?
TIA_pod.
And on Facebook?
This is Africa.
Podcast. Yeah, you can find us there. Feel free to engage with us because... Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely feel free to engage with us. And make sure you guys are watching what's going on in the fight world. Just a quick shout out to Kamaru Usman, Israel Adesanya, and Francis Ngannou, the kings of the fight game. Leaders to our people, inspiration beyond anything people could ask for. So to simply put it, I just wanted to say thank you guys. And to all the young Africans out there, we can be whatever we want to be. Just look at them. Look at us. See you guys soon. Thank you.
Peace.
Pick them one by one. Make me bust my gun. Poison us like a long python. Gunfire in 911 dying. We never let the sound of them.